Welcome to another edition of the Big Pod Machine, a long-awaited decision edition because, Pat, how many weeks has it been? We've been so caught up in All-Star stuff.
I know.
Speedway it's Classic crap show stuff. And
These aren't excuses, but it is our reality on the ground. And, Gordon, we had a lot on our plate there, and we're going to talk about some of that today, aren't we?
And you're pitching in on Bengals stuff, too, so that contributes. But really, that wasn't the story. It was just a whole bunch of stuff going down. So
unbelievable.
Leaves us a lot to talk about, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I'm Gordon Wittenmeyer. This is my partner, Pat Brennan, and we've got Phil Diddy on behind the scenes, the greatest podcast producer in world history. So, Pat, you and I were at that so-called Speedway Classic bullshit gimmick marketing scheme crap that MLB put together and had no backup plan for. Uh-huh. I'm just sticking to the facts here. It was like, have you caught up on any sleep since then? Have you had a chance to think about what went wrong and what, might have been able to go right with some better planning?
You know, Gordon, I've thought about it a lot. To answer your first question, no, I haven't caught up on any sleep. You and I had to hustle home late Sunday after they completed the game. You went right into the Cubs series up in Chicago.
Dude, I didn't get back to Chicago after that drive until just in time to turn in the rental car and rush to the stadium.
And, I mean, logistically speaking, our plan was sound. You know, driving made the most sense. We would have the only feasible way you fly.
We planned as well as MLB did.
Well, I think better, actually, you know, relative. These are, you know, our operation was a little scaled down, but I thought about it a lot because I think, you know what I noticed from talking to a lot of people in person, online, reading comments, people went into this willing to, it's like, it was really interesting because usually you buy a ticket for an event, you want to get quality for the money you spent. And I know that was true in this case as well. But it's like people were willing to showed up to Bristol Motor Speedway willing to give MLB some slack because it was like the public consciousness about what an undertaking this was surprisingly nuanced, I thought. And I observed a lot of people who could have otherwise been just outraged about the waste of money and the money they sunk into this event. You know, they were willing to even concede within a week of the event happening. You know, I could have seen that being a fun time and a great spectacle, but for the weather.
Hey, by the way, let me interject right here. For people that are listening and may not be totally familiar, number one, the event got rained out and suspended. The third, this is a rarity in baseball that a game gets suspended the next day. Yeah. It's already the third one this year for the Reds.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, I mean, they had a built-in off day. Both teams lost it. Chase Burns started, pitched one great inning, was lost for the rest of that game when they had to go into Sunday. They had a bullpen game followed by a short start Monday. Anyway, the one of the biggest points I wanted to make is, Pat, you talked to fans.
Yeah.
All day long on Saturday.
Yeah, yeah.
And so Pat was working the stands and checking out what people had to say. So when Pat makes these observations, they're well-founded. Anyway, sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
No. I think there was an understanding from everyone, including us, that this was an undertaking of the likes of which we had never seen before in baseball, at least not in the modern era, you know. And I would say it's still unforeseen it's unforeseen.
They played it at a NASCAR track in 1911 or something.
Well, and they played the L.A. Coliseum in the 50s, which is the still standing record for most attended MLB game, although it was
an exhibition.
Right? Yeah. So things of this scale had been attempted, but not in this kind of remote rolling, you know, we were on the floor of the Appalachian Mountains, essentially. Bristol is a lovely little town, but fairly desolate. And I just think apparently it has a reputation for rain this time of year as well. So I think especially locals knew what MLB was getting themselves into, even if MLB didn't know what they were getting
Yeah, let
themselves
me
into.
interject one more thing on that. Two of the umpires were from Tennessee, from that area. One of them told one of the Cubs players I was talking to that that you can't predict once a weather pattern moves into the area. You can't predict because of all the exactly what you just said, those rolling hills. Sometimes they move through, sometimes they get stuck between those hills slash mountains.
And I think that's
Again, that's what the
exact.
locals know.
And
So
I think that, and you know, you might have. I think as we go back and dissect the rotting corpse of this event, I think one of the things that we might find, and I think there's evidence to suggest there wasn't enough of this already that we have evidence of this building, you know. I think they could have leaned more and harder on the local experts, from the people who manage crowds in excess of 150,000 for their careers at Bristol Motor Speedway, to people with just on the ground intelligence about how weather flows through that region of the Appalachians.
Well,
And yeah.
I mean, to your point, I think there's two issues here with what went wrong with the planning. The only contingency they had was they built in the extra day, which
That's
worked to squeeze the game in, and nothing more, nothing
and
less. The
that's not
problem,
enough. That's not
right?
enough.
In fact, not enough was a theme from the fan experience because the two elements of this are the fan experience. And because of the nature of this one-off event, where you don't have a venue that's a daily big crowd venue, they planned for concessions and merch for one day. So when this kicked to the second day, we found out 2 hours before game time they were running out of whole kinds of foods, burgers, main things at the concession stands
I mean,
were
staples.
gone.
We're not talking
They
about like food challenge kind of fun things to try. Just basic, you know, what you would consider stadium staples for any event.
And
Gone.
so you had that issue, not to mention the fact that fans who plan to come in for Saturday and spend Sunday, like us, spend Sunday maybe driving home hundreds of miles, had to find accommodations for another night, or at least were pushed way back into
And
maybe affecting their work week. And then the issue is the competitive integrity issue, which really bit the Reds in the ass. I mean, you're talking about two teams. We expected the Braves to be in a playoff hunt, but they're not, no matter what Brian Snitker says. They're 20 games under 500. They're not sniffing anything of great consequence. The
okay, we get it. We get
Reds
it.
are trying to leverage getting a series win out of this by once they decided to start, saying, okay, we're gonna get this in, and trying to get as much as they could out of Chase Burns. And that backfired in a huge way, especially heading into the next day. And they lost the game. They led at the point of the suspension with two men on and what, none out? One
One.
out. One out. And immediately pulled off a double steal to put both runners in scoring position with one out, and wound up not scoring that inning and losing the game. We know the margins they're playing with to try to get into the playoffs. If one game holds them back from the playoffs, we're going to be hearing about this in September and
So,
maybe in October and even next spring.
Gordon, I'm going to finish my thoughts on the Speedway Classic with this. I was struck back, and I told you this on the car ride back. I found it odd back during spring training at Cactus League Media Day in downtown Phoenix. Rob Manfred was giving his rosy, brief overview of how things stood in terms of, you know, the state of MLB going into this season, but also an overview of the kind of jewel events they had coming up this year. And when he got to the Speedway Classic, which he mentioned last, he kind of chuckled. And that always stuck with me. And I don't know why. And I don't want to read too much into it,
Yeah,
but
I mean, I can't
it
imagine he
was,
was laughing at the event, right?
I mean, you know, the guy, look, we can, he's going to take some criticism for this, and he
He
has, and he
has all
will,
right.
and he will continue to. But that moment just made me wonder, like, do they have their hands around this whole thing? I don't know. And maybe I'm misreading that. Here's the
Well,
other thing.
Oh, go ahead.
Here's the other thing, Gordon. We live in an era in 2025, and really this whole century, where people dream big, they dream of executing big, and I think they dream of the money that can come with that, but also...
I think you just hit on it.
The legend and the experience and the promise of if we get this right, we can do it again and again and replicate it. And, you know, we have seen this century alone, just in the last 10 years, I think, events fail, outdoor events fail spectacularly, from the criminally mismanaged Firefest music festival to literally criminally mismanaged to the Bonnaroo music festival, which took place in Tennessee this year. And they had to bang that because of unforeseen weather circumstances that caused the entire infrastructure to fail. That's in my Gordon. That's a really it's like Lollapalooza just out on a farm in Tennessee. And as opposed to inner city Chicago, where Lollapalooza is, and it failed, and they owned it. They pulled the plug immediately, but it was a failure. The infrastructure failed to withstand extreme weather conditions, but in all those situations, and baseball is no stranger to weather interruptions. The performers, the athletes, are typically insulated from consequence. The Reds, as you alluded to there, were directly affected by the events of this game. That's my biggest problem with this event. The fact that the two teams involved, and I want to give the Braves, you know, this game meant something to them too, regardless of where they are.
It meant Jack. It meant nothing. It meant an experience. They were fans just like the people that ran out of hot dogs.
I'm making a really good point. You've just ruined it.
Now you're making a horseshit point, but go ahead.
No, I'm not. You're wrong. The performers, the athletes, should be insulated from consequence when these events fail. In the case of the music shows, that was generally the case, give or take. It didn't happen for the Reds here, who are in a pennant race and could suffer for it. They have suffered for it this week. I wouldn't call last night a bullpen game. I'm here in Pittsburgh covering the four-game series between the Reds and the Bucks. You know,
it was pretty close to it. What they four and a third because they lost.
Yeah, and Yosfer Zulueta was able to eat two innings at the end of the game. That helped a lot because he's a back end guy. Well, not back end in terms of innings, but low leverage guy. So he was able to eat some innings. That helped. But you know, they were taxed again for the third time this week.
In 5 days.
Yeah. So. This is material consequences for the Reds, and that to me, if this has, and maybe the Reds would finish so far out of it that you can't directly go back and say, well, you know, they were so far back of the last wild card spot, but there's a knock on effect from the Speedway Classic, and we've seen that unfold this week. It's still unfolding now. I think they're still trying to play catch up in the bullpen. And, you know, this was not good. This was not a good event.
Well, you know, those points that you made after I interrupted you, those are the good points. I was just ripping you on the idea that the Braves had anything to lose or that they were somehow playing for something, because they're not.
Why don't you text Brian Snitker and tell him that? Because this
Snitker
knows
my feelings. He got pissed off at my question.
That's a conversation for you two to have in private.
Oh, we're still in the hunt. My ass, you're in the hunt. Come on, man.
Why don't you call him and tell him that?
Well, I'm sure I'll get another chance here at some point. I already told him that. But anyway, you could call it an honest mistake. You know, back to, you know, intent and... you know, putting on a show like this, when you put on a show like this in the regular season, you run a major risk. And you could argue that you could argue both sides of this coin. Well, there's six playoff berths available in both leagues. It can't make that much of a difference. Well, when there's that many playoff berths, there's that many more teams that are in it and separated by small margins. These games all matter. And when you put a team at a massive disadvantage, and the Reds wound up at a bigger disadvantage for a number of reasons than the Braves did, regardless of who's playing for what. And so, to the point that Manfred offered his private jet and went and got had his guys go get Lyon Richardson to get his butt down to the game so they'd have enough pitching on that Sunday. So, you know, we're told that they've done all these regular season games. They've never had a weather issue in the past. You know it's going to come up at some point. That's why you build in the extra day. And yet it became this disaster because of all these other things that you probably could have foreseen and didn't plan for, because you didn't plan for worst case scenarios like the best planners do. And so going forward, you either need to add an extra day off on these things, or if you're going to play in a place that doesn't have climate security and like a dome, then you're going to have to build in, maybe play a series. Terry Francona recommended maybe you play a 2-game series over 3 days.
Yeah.
And, you know, at least that helps preserve a normal rhythm and routine for guys within a framework, and you can preserve bullpen, you can get guys down. The other thing is, we know this, right? When they have a doubleheader that's caused by weather or whatever, they get to add an extra player to the roster for free without it being some kind of actual official roster move. You can just add a guy for a day. And it can be a pitcher or a position player. For whatever reason, they mandated in this case that it be a non-pitcher. Neither manager understood why. Like, who made that up? And when they were talking to the commissioner and baseball officials, according to Terry, they didn't get an answer. Like, why? Who came up with this and why?
And they both used this extra spot that they were eventually granted on pitchers.
Eventually, they went and brought in pitchers because of this contingency. This is why you have the extra day. This is the backup planning. You have the extra player in case of X that you don't know is coming. That's always going to be if you have a choice as a guy running the team, it's always going to be a pitcher, because that's far riskier. That's far more a value of insurance to have in a case like this. Anyway. You know, going forward, I hope they fix it. You know, at the end of the day, you know, you can talk about how great we think these things are and all that. They're shoehorning them into regular season, whether it's the Japan series, at least is opening up markets abroad, you know, when you go do something like that.
And that's what they do in London.
Right. And when they go to London, they build in a bunch of days.
Yes.
You know, even the Field of Dreams game was kind of more localized, because I think they went from Chicago. And at least I can't remember if that was a middle series. I don't think that was a middle game of a series, but it's at least one team went back to Chicago. Well, it would have been the Cubs. And they played that, you know, they played that two years in a row, and that seemed to work. The Birmingham game had massive historic significance to it. Willie Mays stuff like that. Like, if you can tie in some significance to it, maybe you can help justify it. But at the end of the day, all of these things are done by the commissioner's office, because the commissioner works for the owners. And this is about growing the revenues in the game. This is about growing the marketing and the money and trying to catch up to the NFL, which you'll never do, but trying to inch closer and be that kind of a league. I get it. It's business. It's always been a business. I'm not yelling at the clouds on that, but protect the integrity of your game along the way. Protect the integrity of the schedule. And to your point, insulate the athletes from these hardships, because I guarantee you, this will, if the Reds, you know, miss the playoffs by 5 games or make it by 5 games, this will be long forgotten. Nobody will care, and then maybe it just becomes a learning day.
Yeah.
If it's one game, if one game keeps them out of the playoffs, it'll be part of Reds history.
Yeah, and part of the reason they could drop off by that amount is because of the Speedway Classic. They might end up finishing one. So, yeah.
I mean, the day after that, when Lodolo had the finger blister and was out in the second inning, they came back. They won that game. Imagine if they'd lost that game.
Yeah, and it's just the problem was exacerbated immediately. They got, I think, 13 2/3 innings from their next two starting pitchers. But then Brady Singer has a short night last night at PNC Park. And the bullpen, you know, Terry's got to protect certain guys in the bullpen again. And other guys went out there, did a great job, gritted it out. They tried to get Brent Suter to go more than an inning, and he couldn't do that. But like I said, Zulueta gave them two innings, which was really, really important by that point when it was 7-0. You don't want to tax any of these guys. They're going to need all of them down the stretch and people in their positions, if in the case of someone like Zulueta, if he gets sent out at some point. So it's just I'd like to see more games with some real meaning tied in, especially with where we're at in America right now. And, you know, the Rickwood game, what a special one that was. And the interview that Reggie Jackson did before that game and what that place, you know, let's see more of that and less of, you know, less pictures of MLB greats and NASCAR greats shaking hand on a racetrack. That's what I'd like to see, Gordon.
So Pat, as we talk, the Reds have 46 games left, three of them against the Pirates, and then 22 of their last 43 against the teams that are currently in NL playoff position.
Yeah.
And they have series against all of those six teams, including Philly and Milwaukee as soon as they get home from this trip.
Yeah.
So 46 games are 3.5 out of playoff position. The Mets, who's the closest team to them, Mets are in Milwaukee this weekend for the next three.
So that could be helpful.
It could be an opportunity. But how do we think they're positioned with 46 games to go? They've got the second or third toughest schedule in the majors, depending on how you measure it the rest of the way.
Yeah.
And I've already outlined how that the last 43 play out.
Well, here's my first thought. Once I realized two nights ago that San Diego had overtaken the Mets for the number two wild card spot, New York dropped down to the number three. With the way that San Diego loaded up at the trade deadline and the way some of those guys are contributing right out of the gate, part of the reason they overtook the Mets so quickly coming off the trade deadline, I like the Reds head-to-head with the Mets a lot more than I do the Padres. So that's my starting point. And the reason I say that, obviously, you can't compare the two teams in terms of roster budgets. You can't compare it. There's probably a talent deficit that the Reds are looking up at as well. I'll grant anyone who wants to make that argument that. But the Reds are combustible. They are boom or bust. And I just see the Padres in the ascendancy right now. I think they're getting ready to run away with their wild card spot and kind of cruise into the finish line comfortably.
Maybe catch the Cubs.
Yeah, exactly. That's not going to be the Mets, I promise you. And I will also concede this. The Mets ceiling is absolutely still that they could win the NL East, but the floor could be as low as missing the playoffs entirely. And when you're boom or bust like that, that's a combustible team. There's so much pressure on the manager and the players right now because of, you know, Juan Soto and all the investment they made in that team. I just like the combustibility of the Mets. And I put that as a pro versus a con for the Reds. So I like the head-to-head matchup if it stays that way for the Reds, much more than I like the Padres.
What I like for the Reds is that they kind of doubled down on what their strength was at the deadline. Yep. Look, they weren't going to go out and get Eugenio Suarez or any other bat that was going to be a massive difference maker in the middle of their lineup.
Yeah.
And besides, had they got Suarez, they wouldn't have upgraded the defensive side of third base. And well, at least not by much. And defensively is an area that they could stand to use some tightening. So when they went and got Ke'Bryan Hayes, guy hasn't hit jack this year. It hasn't for a few years. Okay. But what they did was they got the best third baseman in the game defensively, and they don't have much of that at any position. The fact that they can add that to a defense that's got Spencer Steer across the diamond playing his ass off defensively at first, which is maybe the defensive surprise of the year, and a guy at second base who's one of the top three or four defensive second baseman in the league and one of the best maybe top five center fielders in terms of, he's certainly one of your top two or three defenders in your daily lineup. And they added the catcher in the offseason. Look, they've got the best rotation potentially in the division, honestly, in the division. And maybe, I don't know, Milwaukee's got some guys that are really stepping up and doing a good job. The Dodgers have guys on paper, but most of them are also on the IL. Padres have a few guys. Philly, maybe Philly's the one that's just simply, you don't compete with them being frontline guys and veterans, guys that have been there, done that, and all that. But man, just in terms of talent, frontline talent, guys that can win playoff games. The Reds got to be scary to anybody if they get in. And so the fact that at the trade deadline they doubled down on run prevention by adding a starter, Zach Littell, who had a hell of a debut for the team, adding a guy that can pick it at third better than anybody else in the game right now, and then adding a guy that can hit left-handed pitching, a guy that for the last 2-3 years is one of the best at hitting left-handed pitching in the game, and that's been their Achilles heel in terms of the offense, and that's Miguel Andujar. That's a pretty good trade deadline for these guys. There's every reason in the world to think that they could get better going forward, right?
I mean, look, Ke'Bryan Hayes is the big one for me. I feel like there's going to be a disproportionate amount of attention paid to what he does down the stretch for the Reds because he's gonna be an everyday player more or less, and so right now he's hitting about what the back of his baseball card says. He's actually surprisingly he's a negative WAR player probably for that unfortunate error that he committed in his very first game as a Red, Gordon, against the Braves. But my God,
I give him that one. That's just that happens.
Yeah, first night in the new city, whatever. Man, did he have game-saving? He had game-winning plays over the last two games of the Cubs series, and I know that they didn't win the last game of the Cubs series, but it's the quality of play that can win you a game. Barehanded throws from the third baseline, incredibly athletic, and people. I know the Cubs fans want to point out about that Dansby Swanson play. In the middle game of that, or the opening game of that series, you know, Swanson initially stopped short of the bag and then had to drag his toe across.
He was ruled safe.
It doesn't matter if Ke'Bryan Hayes still doesn't make a great freaking play, and he did, and he put the Reds in the. That's what he does. He's going to give you chances to capitalize on little things like that. I mean. What would Noel V. Marte have done on that play? What would CES have done? Would they have thrown it away? Would they have just eaten it? You know,
right. And here's the other side of that trade, by bringing Ke'Bryan Hayes in to play third on an almost daily basis, what it did was you were getting, and this is Nick Kroll's explanation of this, which I thought was actually very creative. Third base and right field. The Reds ranked among the worst teams in baseball at both fielding and hitting at those positions, at both of those positions. By bringing in Hayes, who's the best defender at that spot, you plug him in and you immediately elevate that position on one side of the ball. And you already were getting among the worst offensive production there. So in theory, you might catch lightning in a bottle and get a little better, but get no worse. In theory. Well, and then you move Marte to right, who's been one of your best hitters when he's played, but you can't play him all the time because he's been such a defensive liability for you. But he's actually athletic enough to handle right field as well as any of the other guys you got out
there. I'll tell
you. And he's done well.
I'll tell you.
So you've upgraded the offensive side of that. You got a whole player at the two positions. You got one whole player by adding two halves.
I'll tell you what, Gordon, it's early days with Marte in right field. I'm sure at some point, you know, we'll see fits and starts from that. I have to assume that, but we haven't seen it yet. To his credit, he made a great play in Chicago last night before the game was out of reach for the Reds. He gunned down Andrew McCutchen, who at his age can still run a little bit. He gunned
that was a
down,
hell of a throw.
It was an unbelievable throw. Tito talked about it after the game, and had it not been such a lopsided night where Paul Skeens really owned the night, I would have made a bigger deal about that play. But it was a great play, and it kept the Reds at a four-run deficit, which at that point in the game was still meaningful.
Especially against the Pirates.
Yeah, so these guys are making plays, and they're not just making plays and padding their stats with hits after the horse is out of the barn. They're making plays in crucial moments of these games. So I think it's been, early days, but I think it was a smart trade deadline. The Reds obviously are working within certain parameters, but the deals they make are so smart and thoughtful.
Well, they have to be, because they're being handed a pile of rocks by ownership to work with in terms of financial resources.
Yeah, but you can still get that wrong. You can still get it wrong if you don't.
No doubt. But I'm giving them credit. I'm saying that.
Yeah.
Yeah. No doubt.
I really liked what they did. I see the vision. Some people might take that as me being a Reds homer, but I'll just tell you straight up, I see the vision. I understood the explanations and how these guys made the Reds better on paper, and I'm sure in some algorithm that the Reds have that they tweak up the executive and on the C-suite at Great American Ballpark. But it worked. I can see it working, man. I really can. And these could be moves that, if things break right, I think the Reds can overtake the Mets, and I think that even more so now with these additions.
I think they still have an uphill battle. A lot of things can
absolutely
happen.
There's no
and they
question.
They have a tough schedule, but I think they did get better. And by the way, I think that Brian Hayes is under contract for 5 more years at not a crazy amount of money. And if they can get anything out of his bat, he's going to look like a good long-term investment too. Anything out of his bat. I mean, even if it's just close to league average, now you're talking about a guy that's well above average there all the way around. And the thing about Noelvi Marte, I know it's very early in his outfield career. He hadn't played in the outfield his entire professional career. He came up as a shortstop and then played a bunch of third. But this guy has handled it. Well, I'm not going to disparage anybody here, but he's already running some routes better than some of the other guys that have been playing outfield as long as I've been covering the team these last 2+ years.
Yes.
And in addition to that, I saw something really encouraging in one of those Chicago games. It was the game's Littell pitch, because everybody that they got in the trade deadline and everybody impacted by that trade deadline contributed, including the Welby. He had a play on a pop-up behind the right side of the infield that was just, it was just far enough from the other guys and just deep enough that it was his ball, but he had to run a long way for it.
Yeah.
And those are the kinds of balls where if you're not an outfielder and you can run flat footed and jar your vision going to that ball and make it an awkward play if you're not used to playing in the outfield. He kept his eye on it, got a good read, came in on it and he made the catch. I don't think that was a routine play. It wasn't ESPN top 5, but that wasn't a routine play either, especially for a guy that doesn't play in the outfield a lot. I think that's a good sign going forward. I think this guy is an outfielder going forward.
Yeah. It's these are exciting times. And I think at the very least, Gordon, here's a question for you, because I think – regardless of what happens down the stretch, and as a fan, you want to see them, get this playoff spot. And I've talked ad nauseum about the value of just getting in, even if it's the last wild card spot.
Well, yeah, because then you don't have to jump in the river.
Well, that's a big part of it, sure. And no one has to see me take my shirt off if that happens. But I've told people how I feel about this. You get in. There's plenty of reason to think that you can make waves as the third wild card in the NL. It's happened 2 of the first 3 years that the third wild card took the pennant. But so it's worth getting in, unlike, you know, scraping into the playoffs in the NBA or the NHL. Forget about that. Even the NFL, even more so. Forget about it. This team, I think, if they fall short of the, regardless of what happens in the playoff race here, you can see they're laying a solid foundation for what comes next. And obviously, I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves. I don't think we're prepared to go into off-season, you know, breaking down what the off-season looked like and moves they need to make. But I think there's a solid foundation being put in place here, in place, with veterans that are bought in. And some of those guys are on expiring deals. But I just like this. If this is the first step, first big step toward the playoffs next year, I like it as that. This has been a productive exercise these first, what, 117 games? What are they at, 120?
Well, whatever it is, they got 46 left, 116.
Yeah, 116, yeah. It's been a productive exercise. They're still in contention, but this has been, I think Reds can feel good about this. Do you, the Reds fans can feel good about the trend lines here. Do you agree?
Yeah. And I don't, to build on your point, like I agree with you and I'm not going to go all, you know, balls deep on this. I just think it's like I agree with your basic point.
Yeah. Right?
And I think the encouraging thing to me was that they kept an eye on some of the long-term thing. I mean, they got Terry Francona under contract for 2 more years plus an option year. They kept an eye on their window at the deadline, kept the guys that they think are going to contribute in the next maybe 2 months, but definitely in the next 8 months of baseball. But they also went out and got the kind of a guy that can have an impact, the kind of a guy that could have helped probably half the teams out there that didn't get what they wanted.
Yeah.
And that's Zach Littell. He was having a good year.
Yeah.
He can pitch out of the bullpen if you need him to, but the way he pitched the other, he's having a really good year as a starter. He's having a good couple of years as a starter. And the way he looked the other night, hell, he might be one of your playoff starters. If he keeps this up. So that's, and he's a rent-a pitcher. So yeah. I give them a lot of credit for being as close as this team ever gets in recent years to being kind of all in.
Yeah.
But also keeping themselves set up going into next year and beyond. So, you know, if you're going to be working at the margins anyway with resources, thanks to Bob and the bunch up there, then that's a pretty damn good trade deadline, I would think, for them.
Yeah.
Now you just hope to see if the Tito bump comes through, right? Because what have we said, man? It's more than 100 winning percentage points different.
Yeah.
Second half compared to first half. Every place he's been, first year there. And that includes Philly, which was horrible.
Yeah.
And they had a winning record second half.
Yeah.
His first year with them. Every place he's been. And so can he do it again here? If he does it again here by even 4 or 5 games difference of 500, that probably gets them in.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree.
Yeah.
All with, they're running out of time, as everyone is in MLB, but it's well within the realm of possibility.
You know what you forgot to bring up and that I forgot to bring up? As we tape this, Hunter Green's pitching tonight. So is Chase Burns, by the way.
Yeah.
One from the big league club. Guess which one? And Hunter's making what might be his last rehab start, depending on how it goes. Tito says that he'll be at the roughly an 80 pitch limit. And if he does really well on that, that's and comes out of it okay, that's when you start talking about, well, is it time to drop him back in the big league rotation, take him off the IL?
Yeah.
And obviously, it seems obvious to me. I mean, he would fit right into that Chase Burns spot, and then maybe Chase goes into the bullpen as a weapon. I mean, nobody's saying this for sure, but it's come up. And my gosh, I just remember, what the hell was it, 2008 and David Price, the year after he got drafted, debuting. He might have debuted right at the end of the season and then was a force in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I think he was the guy. I think he got the last out of the ALCS.
I think he did.
The Tampa Bay Rays.
Beat was that Tito's against Boston?
Yeah. Against Tito's Boston guys. They were the defending champs that year.
That was, yeah, because they won it in 2007. That was 2008.
So you got a 100-mile-an-hour thrower that's got an even better slider, and he doesn't have to worry about throwing any other pitches if he's in the bullpen.
Yeah.
And, you know, you treat him with kid gloves because he's a first-year pro, and you make sure that his workload, you know, probably he's not going to throw back-to-back days, probably not going to throw multiple innings. Maybe out of the chute he will while he's stretched out. And then you unleash him here and there, an inning at a time. Could be, you talk about boosting the bullpen.
Yeah.
The only question is, right, is it going to be too little, too late when Hunter Green comes back?
Yeah. Well, we know Chase Burns is good for a good inning because we saw that at Bristol.
Hey, we sure did, yeah. And that was in adverse conditions, too.
Yeah,
that
was.
It was down, the rain came down hard.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so the reason I say is it is going to be too little, too late. We just talked about Hunter Green maybe coming back 5 or 6 days from now, but what else is going on 5 or 6 days from now? They're going to be in the teeth of that homestand against Philly and Milwaukee.
Yeah.
That's going to be a telltale homestand.
Yeah. The Reds have actually might have an interesting opportunity on their hands in that Phillies series, and maybe they wanted to play it against the Phillies with something a little bit safer. There's a chance that Zach Wheeler, he's scheduled to pitch Sunday, but they pushed him back because of some shoulder soreness. And I'm paying attention to this because of the Cy Young race. But, there's a chance that he could get pushed back again to Monday's opener in Cincinnati. And then you're going against the Zach Wheeler that really, since he had the near perfect game against the Reds in early July, hasn't looked like the same guy. That could be, I know who and what the Phillies are and what we think of them. And I think they're game and a half up in the NL East right now, but there could be an opportunity there too. So
you think, let me correct me if I'm wrong. You're saying maybe they don't get swept. Maybe they only lose 2 out of 3 to the Phillies. Is that what you just said?
No, I think not getting swept is baseline for this team at this point because they didn't get swept by.
Okay. I just give you shit.
Okay, Gordon. You know, we should end this.
Get your swimming trunks ready, pal. Because nobody wants to see me take my shirt off and jump.
I'll see you on the bank. I'll see you. One thing I know for sure, and I can guarantee you, we'll be meeting up this fall at the banks of the Ohio River. Who goes in? Very much still to be determined.
Very much to be determined. All right. Well, that's a good way to wrap this one up. We'll try our damnedest to be on schedule and come at you again next week and be every week the rest of the way.
Yeah.
As the season heats up at this point. For Pat Brennan, our terrific producer, Phil Didion, and myself, Gordon Wittenmeyer, that's a wrap for the Big Pod Machine. Thanks for listening again.
The biggest Reds podcast in the world.
Biggest podcast in baseball in the world.